You're listening to Turning Hard Times into Good Times with your host, Jay Taylor. If you have a question or comment about today's show, Jay would love to hear from you at 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. You can also send an email to questionsfortaylor@gmail.com. That's questions, the number 4, taylor@gmail.com. Now, back to our program.
Welcome back to Turning Hard Times to Good Times. I'm your host, Jay Taylor, and I'm really pleased to have with me once again Jeff Deist. Jeff, most of you probably know Jeff Deist as a former advisor to Ron Paul, Congressman Ron Paul. He was the big help to Ron during his campaign, and he worked with Ron Paul a number of years. He was, he's one of Ron's closest advisors. He certainly was the chief of staff, and I've learned to know a couple of the people that worked with Ron and with Jeff down in the office when Ron was a congressman and a candidate for president. Jeff also has a background in taxes. He's an accountant, and he's a lawyer. He's actually a lawyer, a tax lawyer. And now, though, he's probably doing what I think is most worthwhile of his career, working at the Mises Institute, which is an educational institution to help people understand the merits of free market economics, and certainly something that Americans shouldn't have to really work too hard to understand. I thought we were supposed to be a free market capitalist system. Well, we're anything but that. And so the need for the Mises Institute. Jeff, thanks for joining me again today.
Hello, Jay. It's great to talk to you.
Always good to have you with me. We want to talk about trade today and tariffs. And we're going to be talking in the second half of today's show about that. My guest is suggesting that there is no such thing as free trade. There is only game of trade, Darwinian game of trade, he calls it. I certainly know, you know, you as a free market advocate I'd be surprised if you weren't very strongly in favor of free trade, free international trade, free trade domestically as well as wherever you go, right? But what are your thoughts about the tariffs that Trump has recently suggested he's going to implement?
It's an interesting question because I agree somewhat that trade is a game and there are winners and losers in games. And when we look at Trump's tariffs, I view them through a very different lens than most people, probably even most Americans, maybe even most conservative or libertarian or free market Americans, in the mm-hmm. sense that I'm totally opposed to tariffs. I see them not only as always just a tax, always mm-hmm. just a tax on the buyer, but more importantly, as something that expands state power. Mm-hmm. In other words, it's not that the Japanese company that's importing the steel that I'm buying is getting more money from them. It's that my own government is getting more money from me and thus expanding and consolidating its power. And it's also playing an outsized role in deciding what I can and cannot do, what I can and cannot buy, or how much it costs. Now, that said, if somebody, even as a hardcore libertarian, if somebody said to me, we're going to completely replace income taxes with tariffs, which is basically the story of the United States up until the corporate and individual income tax was passed in 1913, you know, that wouldn't be a bad trade, because I think the process of taxing income and what that has become with all of the compliance burden, with all of the nosiness, with all the thousands of pages of regulation that get into every aspect of our lives and our income and our work, is far worse in many ways from a privacy and compliance standpoint. So I understand the arguments about unfair trade and unlevel playing field. I understand the arguments about dumping, etc. I wholeheartedly disagree with them. But more importantly, apart from the pure economics, Jay, my biggest concern is that we're giving our own government, a bunch of bad people in Washington, D.C., who don't much like us, more power over us, which is certainly not what Trump campaigned on. And so I'm dead set against tariffs. And I do, unlike a lot of even conservative free trade advocates like a Lawrence Kudlow, I absolutely believe in unilateral tariff free trade. In other words, even if other countries slap 30% import duties on each and every American product, we should still accept their products without any tariffs whatsoever, because again, it's just a tax on the buyer and it's more power to FedGov, which is something I think is bad for everybody.
Yeah, it's. I guess that certainly is a consistent view of us libertarians, for sure. But, I mean, going back into history, as you point out, up until 1913, we had a very small government compared to what we have now. Now, and the government relied solely, pretty much solely on tariffs, I guess, up until then, right? And it was after that, 1913, when they could start the income tax, and they could start... of course, then when we went off the gold standard in 1971, the international gold standard, that really freed up the government and the banking system to start creating money out of nothing, redistributing wealth, or the power of the state. So what you're saying is if you could have a trade-off between tariffs as a form of governments gaining revenues or the system we have now, you'd prefer that.
Well, it's a bit more transparent. It's a bit more avoidable. It's far less onerous, but I got to tell you an interesting statistic. I was looking at some of the history of the 16th Amendment just a couple days ago, and the income tax, which now accounts for more than half of federal revenues between individuals and corporate, the income tax was very much sold as a soak the rich scheme. In fact, for the first couple decades afterward, it really only applied to about 5% of the population. So you think how easy that would be to get passed. And mm-hmm. The income tax rate, the percentage rate without all the complex deductions we have today, was only 1% on the first $20,000 of income, which in today's terms would be something like $300,000, $400,000. And up to the first $500,000 of income, which would be many millions today, the rate was only 7%. So talk about incrementalism. My God, what a monster people created 100 years ago, and they did so thinking that they were just taxing some rich guy they didn't know. And look what they did to their own grandkids and what we all have to do now every year around April 15th.
Yeah, it's. I mean, the percentage of income that's taken by government now of GDP is just enormous. Of course, Jeff, I want to ask you, to what extent, you know, you alluded to Trump's going back on his campaign promises. He campaigned to a great extent about, you know, a less intrusive foreign policy. He even suggested that some of the things that we've done in the past, the wars of the past in Iraq and Libya and places like that, he really was hard on Hillary for some of those things. And then what's he do? But he brings in John Bolton, who to this day is still sort of not apologizing, saying it was the right thing to do. Iraq was good for America. What do you make of Trump's rolling back a lot of his, I mean, basically seeming to do a 180-degree turn on a lot of his campaign promises? And I wonder to what extent some of those, you know, military policies that he seems to be espousing now aren't related to foreign trade in some ways.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it, how they always go wrong on foreign policy. George W. Bush did very much the same thing, campaigned on a kinder, gentler, mm-hmm. non-interventionist foreign policy, and then turned. I think part of it is simply that no single human can understand and know all the trouble in the world. Yeah. No single human can know everything about climate change and economies and healthcare and Social Security, much less the current geopolitics of Somalia or Syria or Iraq or any other place. So it really is absurd that presidents have as much power and as much say over life and death as they do. So what happens is they become malleable. They become an empty vessel for always ready and eager supplicants. You know, you might equivalent to a king's court to come whisper in their ear and flatter them. And I think W was easy to flatter. I think Donald Trump is easy to flatter. And so there's a natural human desire to be loved and want to be loved and want to be popular. So unfortunately with Trump, when he does foreign policy type things is when he tends to get at least some grudging respect from the mainstream media when he talks tough on Korea or Syria or anyone else. Now, Bolton is a bridge too far. I mean, this guy is not even in the realm of Trumpian campaign foreign policy. I mean, this guy is about as hawkish a human being as I believe or as I know exists in the U.S. foreign policy establishment. So it's a devolution, and I don't think Trump would have been nominated if other things were going, excuse me, Bolton would have been nominated if other things were going better for Trump. I think this is a symptom of Trump sort of unraveling and trying to regain some footing.
Yeah, and the respect of those that will give him some on the grudgingly, as you say. Jeff, with just a few minutes left here, one of the things I wanted to ask you about was and I should mention to my listeners that the Mises Institute has some excellent articles, and I would really strongly suggest that people go to it's Mises.org, M-I-S-E-S.org. One of them that caught my eye was one written by Alistair MacLeod, who will be our guest next week, China's Plan to End Dependency on American Trade. China is setting up, they've increased their gold holdings to a great extent. They've set up the Shanghai Futures Exchange for oil and for gold as well. And there's some thought that of the petro yuan that may be in the making. China, I think it was just yesterday when they started to formally put into practice the purchase of oil for yuan in the Shanghai Exchange. And of course, they're doing all this infrastructure build out, the One Belt, One Road. And Alistair is talking about how, in that article, how China is planning to end their dependency on American trade. I don't know if you've read that article or not, Jeff, but do you have any thoughts along those lines? And do you think, to a certain extent, one of the reasons we're hearing more vitriolic or sort of anger directed towards China because of what they're doing and their growing independence and growing economic strength?
No question. I think it was a great article. I did read it after you sent it to me. But more importantly, this is what a lot of people think is behind the saber rattling towards Iran, that a few mm-hmm. years ago, Iran had threatened or decided to create an oil bourse priced in euro rather than mm-hmm. dollars. So if the Chinese economy, which is the second biggest in the world, it's small per capita, but in nominal aggregate GDP, it's quite large. If the second largest economy in the world decided that it didn't need dollars to buy oil and that its trading partners didn't need dollars to buy oil from it, including the Russians, perhaps the Brazilians, perhaps the Indians, that would be an awful lot of dollars that countries currently need that they wouldn't need. So all of these little things, maybe not any of them alone, but all of these little things become little shocks that could upset the dollar. And so rather than looking maybe for some cataclysmic event, maybe we should just look for the next little feather on top that topples the dollar over from being this king world reserve currency to something that's needed less and less. And once the ball gets rolling downhill, I think U.S. treasuries, which are spread out all over the world, are going to be in a very ugly sell position, which is going to require either the raising of interest rates or some kind of nominal collapse, some sort of nominal default. Mm-hmm. So it's very, very interesting. And I think the Chinese won't continue to grow at the pace that they've grown in the last 20 years, but nonetheless, we can hardly ignore it when mm-hmm. the second biggest economy on earth starts saying, "Nah, we don't need dollars anymore."
Yeah, they're the second biggest economy, but it's my understanding, Jeff, they are now the number one importer of oil. The U.S. Having become somewhat independent or less dependent on foreign sources, having its fracking and other sources that is developing here. So the Chinese are in a strong position to go to the Saudis and others and say, we don't want to pay you in dollars anymore. We want to pay you in yuan. And by the way, if you don't like yuan, you can go over to the Shanghai Gold Exchange and hedge your yuan with gold. That seems to be what my understanding of what may be transpiring. But as you say, Jeff, you said something to me when you were still working with Dr. Paul, and that was about how all of these agencies, these big bureaucracies in the government, are so large that nobody can control even one of them, let alone the whole group of major bureaucracies. It seems to me that this is a that the United States empire is an entity that's sort of out of control. There's nobody that can really sort of harness it or keep it from just going until it reaches its end. What are your thoughts?
Well, it's entirely true. The what Congress and the executive branch purport to control is far too vast for a few hundred people in Washington to oversee. And so what happens is administrations come and go, members of Congress come and go, the makeup of the Supreme Court comes and goes, but a bunch of lifers at the various administrative agencies, protected, by the way, by federal union laws, make the real policy that we all have to live under. That's when I say the government, what I really mean is the federal administrative agencies, not the politicians themselves.
Is that what we mean by the deep state?
It's not deep. It's right in front of us. It's just boring and bureaucratic. There's nothing deep about it. It's in very plain sight.
Well, I mean, is that would you extend that out then to some of the media, to the news media as well, that seems to play right into it and defend it?
Well, they absolutely do, and they want something to write about, and they want to sell newspapers, and they want to sell subscriptions. But look, you know, the people who want to govern us are not people like us, and they're not people who much like us.
Yeah,
you know, they are a separate part of America, and they're increasingly separating themselves, I guess, by choice.
Yeah, and they want us to be their servants, I guess. I guess we're going to have to leave it go at that, Jeff. We are out of time for this segment, but I want to thank you very much for coming on with us. It's Mises.org. You can follow all that Jeff does there, the company, that what Mises does. Lots of great articles. And, Jeff, I think you're still doing a weekend podcast, are you not? Or
Yes, every Friday afternoon, Mises Weekend Show. Great stuff.
Who would be, do you know who your guest will be this week?
We're having a great guest this week, a young and upcoming PhD professor who's going to talk about what kinds of things we ought to consider are outside of economics. In other words, are relationships outside of economics? Is religious faith outside of economics? Are charitable acts outside of economic analysis? Or are all of these things still part and parcel of what we would call economic man? It's a great question, especially since libertarians are often accused of viewing humans as these kind of soulless economic actors. I disagree, of course, but we'll explore it.
Oh, that should be very interesting. Thanks for telling us about that, and thanks for being with us again, Jeff.
All right. Thank you, Jay.
All right, folks. Well, we do have to go to break, but don't go away. Charles Hugh Smith will be with us to tell us what his views are on foreign trade. He says there is no free trade. There's only Darwinian game of trade. So don't go away. We'll be right back with Charles Hugh Smith.
Become our friend on Facebook. Post your thoughts about our shows and network on our timeline. Visit Facebook.com/Voice America.
Noble Resources Corp. trades on the OTCQX under the symbol NSRPF and on the TSX Venture Exchange under NVO. Its flagship assets are located in the Karratha region of Western Australia, where they are currently drilling and trenching their Perdies Reward Project. In addition, Novo has partnered with Sumitomo Mining Corporation to advance its Beaton's Creek Gold Project toward production. With over $70 million in cash and strong shareholder support from the likes of Kirkland Lake Gold, Novo is well on its way to establishing itself as one of the top junior explorers and developers in Australia.
Uranium Energy Corp. NYSE Market, UEC, is a leader in the coming bull market in uranium, with spot uranium up more than 40% in 2 months. The new bull market is just starting. UEC has the cash, the licensed resources, the permitted processing center, the advanced technology, and the experienced team to lead this market. Get to know this exciting company now by visiting uraniumenergy.com. NYSE Market, UEC.
We're always talking business.
Talk to an expert.
Call now, toll free, 866-472-5790. That's 866-472-5790. Voice America Business Network.